Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel. They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. You guys ever heard the... I was thinking, what's a good way to get into this? Have you guys ever heard the phrase, the United States as the world's police?
Sure. Yeah. In that South Park movie.
America,
for care. Team America, World Police, right? That was the whole joke about behind that movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, yeah. Simply because we go around setting up military bases in a lot of places.
Willy and or nilly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and look, obviously, Americans in the audience tonight are going to be the first to point out this country has serious problems. If we're going to be diplomatic about it, also diplomacy, that comes into play. But the facts on the ground are the following. The United States, despite its shenanigans and despite some unethical actions, it has also maintained rule of law. It has stabilized global trade. Right now, the United States is helping fight pirates. That's right, folks. Pirates are a thing again. And it turns out if he digs your vibe, Uncle Sam can and will provide endless benefits to your government.
And military.
Well, first your military, and then maybe your military becomes your government. As they say in the musical Hamilton, it must be nice. It must be nice to have Washington on your side. This is the story of one such program, a traveling show, if you will, called Exercise Flintlock. What is it? Why do critics deem it controversial? Here are the facts. Uncle Sam is a busy boy. He's a busy, busy boy.
Can I just get out of the way so I don't say it later? Whenever I see Flintlock, I think of Flintstones and bedrock. Just putting that out there.
Yeah. I think about starting fires. Don't you guys?
That too.
Huh? A little Flint. So this episode is kind of like a break off from our Oh, the Places You Can't Go episode that we recently did. Just because we were looking at what was going on in Africa and why there were so many coups going on there pretty recently. And I don't want to spoil too much, but we're looking at this specific thing called Exercise Flintlock that reminds me a lot of our previous episodes we've done on large scale military drills and almost like get togethers, I guess, that have occurred like Jade Helm in the past.
Picnics, you know, that kind of stuff.
Get togethers.
Yeah.
A little bit of fellowship, you know, a little bit of common interest shared.
Some light target practice, perhaps some ops.
Yeah. But in like Jade Helm that we've covered in the past, like I said, you can find our episode on it. That was, it's almost more of private military contractors and companies that produce military gear kind of getting together and showing off what's available. Right.
Right.
And then
it's like a trade show almost.
It is like
a Comic Con
with a mixed in like urban battleground exercise kind of thrown in there, you know.
What was the one that the conspiracy theory was that they did it at Walmart or something, or they
Jade Helm?
That was the one. Yeah, that ended up being bunk, but it was believable for a sec.
It was, I think it was due to concerns about FEMA, because there were many pre-made containers that were arriving via rail. There was also a helicopter. We talked about that.
That's right.
That was in a disused Walmart.
That ended up being storage for some official use. They were just using that, or they were leasing that property for official storage use.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, most people in the United States are, I would say, vaguely aware that Uncle Sam gets up to some stuff abroad. Accept this as a known fact and don't often dig deeper into the specifics of these activities, much less the economic forces at play, unless they are pointed toward exploration of these via, you know, your favorite media of choice. And it's true, the U.S. has committed numerous horrifically illegal acts on foreign soil and, spoiler, on its own people, on its own soil in the past. These acts continue in some version in the modern day, according to critics. And yes, the U.S. economy makes a great deal of profit from these activities year over year. I was hoping, if it's okay with you guys, we could throw to just one little juicy nugget from old President Eisenhower, which our pal Rob Reiner also pointed to in an earlier conversation.
It's not a dinosaur shaped, because it might be a dangerous nugget if that's the case. You know, the thing you just said, Ben, about the horrific acts, illegal acts, it kind of feels like one of those things where the sentiment is, well, if we do it, it's not illegal.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, because we never make it to any kind of criminal, you know, like international court to be judged.
Well, unless you throw a little party like the church committee that, again, we just talked about with Mr. Reiner.
And the United States does not respect the jurisdiction of the ICC, the International Criminal Court. So former President Eisenhower, on his way out of office, this is something we talked with our pal Rob about, he warned the United States and indeed the world that he was worried a certain industry might take over what he saw as the otherwise noble mission of being the global police. Here's a short clip from his farewell address.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
Fun fact about that speech, he did write it himself, and before he went to air with this farewell address, he was calling it the military-industrial congressional complex. That
which
part
was a
got
dig,
snipped
right?
out.
That was wouldn't that have been considered a dig on Congress? And so they thought it was too much, or what?
Well, somebody's got to authorize the war and, you know, the military actions. At least, you know, yeah.
And I just mean it got cut because it maybe was considered a little too pointed, perhaps, right?
Yeah. Hashtag Smedley Butler was right. There is another factor in this, which is that in the process of pursuing hegemonic power and year-over-year profits for different connected companies, the United States does also ensure a degree of, when things work, stability, continuity, and safety. Depends on your perspective, though, because a significant amount of U.S. military activity on foreign soil, it centers on what we would call facilitation. We're not going to wage the war, but we're going to teach you how wars are waged.
We'll give you a little nudge, maybe a little help, perhaps some armaments. Interested? Mm-hmm.
Shout out School of the Americas. Recently rewatched our old video on the School of Americas, and it holds up. Located for a time in Fort Benning, Georgia.
Yeah. Did we say what Flintlock is exactly? I know I've kind of like vaguely talked about stuff that's like it, but did we say exactly what it is yet?
Flintlock is, well, it depends on who you ask, right? That's what we're setting up, because Flintlock is one of those facilitational activities. In its most recent iteration, it's 2 weeks per year. Right. And that started in 2005. But there's a long history to it, because starting around the end of World War II, the United States earned a bit of a street rep for overthrowing unfriendly governments, often through unethical means. We're talking propping up student movements, quote unquote, arming secessionist groups, like you pointed out, Noel, even assassinating elected leaders, coup d'etat as functional policy. And for critics, exercises like Flintlock are a direct descendant of ethically questionable behavior. But for supporters, this is necessary. This is holding the line from chaos.
What makes it an exercise versus an operation?
Okay, so that I think that's what I want to get to, like actually define it. So it is a special operations counterterrorism exercise where there are all kinds of different drills and training scenarios that the DOD call, often in the U.S. Army, calls them regional forces, but it's really just a bunch of different militaries and paramilitary groups that are from what they call their African partners. Again, the DOD and the U.S. Army. And it's a bunch of partner nations within Africa that work together with the U.S. and with a couple other European countries to basically train their militaries and their troops, or, you know, small groups of their militaries in these counterterrorism special operations tactics.
Police forces as well, to militarize those further. Again, this was not happening, is not happening in a vacuum. During the Cold War, the USSR was doing very similar things. We have to remember, and terrorist groups are doing similar things now. Rival states are using proxies like Wagner, like Hezbollah, and so on. We have to remember these things, these tactics, this practice of facilitated learning, they are used because they work. They are effective the way firearms are effective. Their success is a matter of operational rather than moral or ethical efficacy. So it doesn't matter to the gun who gets shot. It matters to the gun that the gun works. And in the wake of Iraq and its sequels, and notably the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001, the U.S. military industrial complex that Eisenhower warned us about found an opportunity to normalize and mainstream a never-ending war. This comes in the wake of when the U.S. figured out, hey, what if we wage wars on ideas, right? There's the war on drugs. Drugs won. There's the war on poverty that was very short-lived because it didn't do well in the polls. And then, of course, there are culture wars. So this larger milieu, this context, is mission critical for us to understand. There is an active war on terrorism. What is terrorism? Depends on who you ask. It's definitely non-state actors. That's one of the big differences. What makes a war on terror different from a war on a state power?
It's about optics, right? I mean, it's like we always say one person's freedom fighter is another person's terrorist. And all depending on how you label the terrorist, it can be a convenient tool to making them an enemy that you then need to eradicate. And it, you know, you wage a certain amount of the war in the war of public opinion. You know, nobody wants to think that you're going after good guys who are trying to liberate, you know, their people. You have to be fighting a bad guy.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because another aspect of Flintlock is to have the individual countries and militaries not only, you know, fighting against terrorism within their own territory, but to train them to share that information, right? And to encourage the sharing of information across borders. Because, as you said, Ben, like terrorism, if you're fighting that rather than a neighboring country, that thing could exist in your, on your land, right outside your land, deep in, you know, a couple neighbors over's land. So it's interesting to think about there needing to be some kind of united front to really combat a concept like that, that could represent any number of different cells or organizations.
Mm-hmm. Which are often fluid and decentralized. Three key differences between a war on capital T terror versus the war on a conventional state power. Traditional agreements like the Geneva Convention, those agreements erode. Those ideas about, you know, the Red Cross, about journalism, etc., they fall to the wayside quite quickly. And second, the opponent, the whatever represents capital T terror, has no limiting factors in terms of legality. The concept of war crime is not a concept practiced by a terrorist group. And there, the third, and it sounds like a small detail, but I think it speaks directly to some of the points we're bringing up. There's no clear representative leadership, meaning there's often no single authoritative source to declare victory or defeat. Altogether, that means you could be fighting a war that does not end. It simply transforms. This is true. Look at Boko Haram. Look at ISIL, ISIS. Look at Al-Qaeda. These groups can function at an advantage. A powerful state actor, yes, can become economically addicted to war. And arguably, the U.S. and several European countries are in that situation. However, a powerful enough non-state actor can leverage existing tensions and conflicts, right? You know, Saudi Arabia and Iran don't get along. So which one of them is going to fund your newest project, right? And what do they want? This means that these groups can, at times, enjoy the advantage of power, state-level power, with very few constraints that that power typically entails.
I think the part about a lot of this that really, I learned this phrase recently, bakes my noodle, is that there really is no moral high ground. It's all just deal-making. It's like, who is going to benefit us in the long term? How can we, you know, whatever, in some way, walk away from it with some kind of upside? But it's not about saving the world. It's not about protecting innocence. It really hurts my feelings.
It's about saving a version of the world. The problem is people don't agree on which version, right? Ooh. I mean, I love bake my noodle. That's a great one.
Something to bring up in here is that you're talking about who's going to fund it. We'll get deep into this, but in the case of this giant exercise, Flintlock, that we're going to be talking about, it's not just the U.S. military and the partners, like the European partners, coming in with a bunch of money and saying, hey, have some free training, right? This is the U.S. and these contractors and everybody that's working, you know, with them for this training, getting these African countries to pay to be a part of it that then funds the entire thing, right? It's not just some party that they're going to have. It gets funded by the members, the partners that are selected from the African countries.
And as long as you don't look too deep into the forensic accounting of where the money to fund that stuff comes from, then it's all well and good. There are clear good and bad guys. The United States encountered a renaissance of training and facilitation across South America, Asia, parts of Europe, the continent of Africa. Uncle Sam started growing, training, and guiding militaries in a conflict that it characterized as a borderless conflict. The idea at first blush, obviously, it's utopian. Could we stop wars before they began? If we could, then we would necessarily have to. It would be the ethical thing to do. Flintlock grew from this milieu, and that's part of why it continues today.
It's like green war. It's packaging. This idea of a war without borders, it's not possible. That's not how wars work. But it's all about this kind of like PR line. It's making me very, very depressed.
Well, this is us giving you some context. This is us giving a little bit of a dance in the shallow pool. Let's pause for a word from our sponsors and dive into the deep water.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that that guy's the doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Here's where it gets crazy. All right, what is Flintlock? What is Flintlock?
Well, first, Flintlock is kind of an umbrella term that describes a series of different, like you said, Matt, different training programs. Again, sort of like exporting American tactics and possibly a little bit of ideology, but definitely training and hardware to other countries. So let's go to the United States Africa Command, street name AFRICOM, which is that makes sense. It's a nice portmanteau. Here's how they describe this ongoing program. Flintlock, U.S. Africa Command's premier and largest annual special operations exercise, has taken place annually since 2005 across the Sahel region of Africa among nations participating in the Trans-Sahara Counterterrorism Partnership and are planned by African partner nations' Special Operations Forces, Special Operations Command, Africa, and the U.S. Department of State to develop the capacity of and collaboration among African security forces to protect civilian populations.
Great. 10-10. No notes, right? There's a lot of somewhat vague language there, right? The Trans-Sahara Counterterrorism Partnership is something that a lot of people in the West probably haven't heard of, because why would you know about this if you weren't looking? The statement that you read, Noel, it's from 2023. However, Flintlock, going to your earlier point about an umbrella term, Flintlock is much older as an idea. It dates back to the 1960s when Special Forces Group, it was a 10th Special Forces Group, they were attempting to fight against communism. They were training forces in Denmark and Germany, West Germany, of course, and Spain and Greece.
Yeah.
Yeah, in an attempt to prevent the spread of fascism, they were bulwarks against the domino theory, which we talked about a little bit earlier. And it continued after that.
And with Rob Reiner, if I'm not mistaken, right? The domino theory, we talked about communism as kind of this ghoul that had to be dealt with and sort of justified a lot of ends.
Mm-hmm. Specifically Vietnam, Southeast Asian theater. And we have to remember that on the other side of the Cold War equation, the USSR was looking at capitalism in much the same way. Exercise Flintlock, this is a cool little bit of history. It continued. Some version of it. And we know that the roadshow moved to the United Kingdom in the 1980s. And we know part of this due to an extremely unfortunate death. Sergeant First Class, a guy named Clifford Strickland, died testing something that in theory is super cool. It's the Skyhook system. Remember that from Christopher Nolan's Batman?
Oh, yeah. It's immediately what came to mind.
Yeah.
Wait, I don't know what that is. What is that?
Skyhook was
remember the scene where he gets extracted with like a harness and then like basically a plane
comes down.
He takes
the accountant out.
Yeah, okay.
The evil accountant.
Big scene. He's in Tokyo or something. Like he's definitely out of the country and it's meant to be like a military level extraction kind of
deal. I believe he's in Hong Kong because the government of China will not extradite one of their own. That's the line there, right? And so anyway, Flintlock also has this experimental aspect to it, right? There's a lot of tried and true training and tactics. And then, at least in the 1980s, there were a couple of more innovative things that went spectacularly wrong. And when people talk about Flintlock now, they're not really talking about that stuff from decades ago. They're referring to the ongoing training program via AFRICOM and its partners that began in 2005. The less sexy, less cool name for this kind of stuff is JCET, Joint Combined Exchange Training. Snapping the fingers to wake up anybody who fell asleep hearing that.
Oh, no, you're a chicken again. Oh, sorry about that. You've
been
hypnotized this whole time.
The worst thing you could possibly be. Please don't chase me around a campfire.
Tiny dinosaurs.
Sorry.
Yeah. Well, just this exercise is so complicated and weird, and it's got such a history, Ben. Thank you for finding all this stuff in the history. It's so nuts. But it's weird to think that it's not just U.S. military. It's not just United Kingdom military and those two Western forces and their interests and training that's being provided, right? The tactics that those two countries have. They're bringing in all kinds of other partners. I think Germany has been a part of it for quite a while. They're a major part of AFRICOM in general. But it's not just U.S. military training. It's also like U.S. intelligence from the FBI that gets involved to share tactics for policing. As you said, these exercises get involved with the local police forces, as well as the Department of Justice to help out with, you know, how to actually bring justice to the bad guys once you get a hold of them or how to pursue those things. And even the State Department of the United States when it comes to those anti-terrorism activities and how to track down, basically how to investigate, track down, and then in a weird way question like local civilians of resident, like just of a residential area where maybe something has gone down, you're tracking leads, how to interrogate people. It's really crazy how just multifaceted this series of exercises is.
Another important point there, in terms of the intelligence stuff and the State Department stuff, from my understanding, there's a significant amount of instruction put into what we would call hearts and minds projects. Like not only how do we find the people we're calling the bad guys this decade, but how do we also persuade civilians in rural areas that we are in fact the good guys? How do we frame and guide their perspective?
Well, yeah. How do we get those people to raise a hand, right? The whole see something, say something kind of mentality. You can see that getting injected into this.
Hey, I'm a stranger from Langley. Snitch on your cousin for me. what's going to happen? Oh, he's probably going to die, you know, but.
Well, you got to tell you that up front.
You guys like blue jeans? You guys like 50 Cent?
It's the same way the cops do you, and they try to get you to flip on somebody. They say, oh, you'll be fine. We'll protect you. Don't worry about it. And then, you know, they don't, and you end up dead.
And again, we are, when we talk about this, when we talk about things like Flintlock, I think it's very important for us to say we are in no way accusing the people who are operating there of being supervillains. We're not saying they're out there to do evil stuff. Again, if you look at the official rationale, and if you look at the types of programs, which, you know, some of it's classified for sure, but if you look at what they're doing, they are attempting to empower people. They are attempting to empower local governments that would otherwise potentially be overrun by the consequences of previous similar exercises. Whatever. It's true.
Or despots and dictators. I mean, there are, you know, there are moneyed interests, right, that have strings attached to other powers. Like, that's kind of what you mean. Like, other very powerful countries that have economic interests in various African countries that have various troves of resources, right, that can be extracted. And we know that those, often the governing bodies can be manipulated depending on what kind of purse you're throwing around.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Wagner, right? Mm-hmm. Street name Russia. Shout out to our good friends working for Uncle Xi. You know what I mean? Shout out to France's public relations team for still trying to make them look like the good guys in Africa.
They're pretty charming.
Yeah, well,
the French.
Maybe yeah. In Paris. You should see them when they're out in the field. So
fair enough.
Yeah. So U.S. Special Forces in the current iteration of Flintlock, they kick it twice a year in the African continent for this training. And the most recent version happened March 1st through 15th of 2023. It's a win-win, or that's how it's seen. And there is validity to the concerns. The threat of nebulous terrorist or separatist groups, it looms large on humanity's first continent. Specifically now, in 2023, Flintlock is attempting to provide expertise and security for nations being affected by chaos in the Sahel, like you mentioned, the Sahel region of Africa. There are a lot of chaotic groups there that have, we'll say it, ties to larger global entities at times. And they themselves, again, going back to tactics, many of these groups also have training and in some cases equipment that is state actor level. And as such, it could overwhelm domestic state forces that historically have struggled with corruption, with funding, and honestly, with decent training, because you need experienced people when you're engaging in this sort of business.
Well, and let's talk about the specific countries that have been involved in this. They many of them have been involved like from early in the process, back in 2005, when this version of, let's say this version of Flintlock began, right? And some of it continued on, others have joined up more recently. But, you know, the stuff I was looking at, guys, was from around 2020 when Flintlock was occurring then, and then just looking forward. But we can list off some countries here. African nations that have been partners for Flintlock include Burkina Faso, Cameroon, Chad, Cabo Verde, Guinea, Mali, Mauritania, Morocco, Nigeria, Senegal, Ghana. There are a ton of countries that have been involved. And we're going to talk about in a little bit, there may be a reason that you've heard some of those names pretty recently in the news.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh boy. So right now, earlier this year, as you said, Matt, the newest iteration of Flintlock was conducted. It is international. It was conducted in Ghana and Côte d'Ivoire, not French speakers, Ivory Coast, you might also know it as. We are talking this time around 1,300 military personnel from all told 29 countries in some capacity. Basically, and I know this might make some of our fellow conspiracy realists who are veterans, I know it might make some of us a little salty to hear it, but basically, you could call it a pop-up version of the School of the Americas.
Or what was the training camp where we just talked about it with Rob Reiner. The Cuban exiles were being trained for sniping, and where Lee Harvey Oswald, apparently showed up and was trained to use
Brigade
a rifle.
2506? Is that the one?
Oh, it was something like that, but it was
That was the group of dudes that were sponsored by the CIA. That wasn't where they hung out.
Wave, I think, or I don't know how to. I don't
Dave
know.
And Buster's. We're almost there. We're close.
Damn it.
It was one of those. It was definitely one of those or something like it. But the aim of Flintlock is to, again, empower local governance, right? Empower the local armed forces, which does often involve militarizing the police, such that they can continue things that we often take for granted in the United States. Just to be very clear, one example would be the peaceful passage of power. Right. The fact that for quite some time, the United States, a very young country, has successfully and peacefully passed from one president to another, even when they clearly hate each other. Like the fact that that has happened for a couple centuries is kind of cool. And it's not super common in world history for that kind of thing to occur. So there is validity to the statement about this, but there's also the other side. One of the big factors here, it's not altruism. One of the big factors is to ensure the spice flows, whatever the spice may be, to ensure the stability of global trade and therefore, indeed, the global economic system as it is currently understood.
Guys, if you don't mind, I'd love to read a quick quote from R. Clark Cooper that we talked about before. This guy is a part of the State Department, let's say, and he is speaking at the closing ceremonies for Flintlock 2020. And he's talking about, I think, the same thing, but not saying it out loud. Does that make sense? He's speaking around it in a way.
Let's hear it. Let's hear the dance.
Please.
Okay. Oh, there's a lot of stuff in here, but
I'm so excited.
Okay. It's kind of long. Bear with me. Here we go. But more than being an opportunity for us to each improve individually, Flintlock is an opportunity for all our nations to grow together in a healthy partnership. But not all partnerships are healthy. But the one we celebrate here today is. How can I tell? Simple. Because it's a partnership based on mutual respect and shared values, not self-interest and exploitation. Because partnership contributes to self-sufficiency, not lasting dependency.
Does that sound a little condescending?
It does feel that way to me, yeah, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't know, but I just gotta please, set this please. Up so you get the feel of the way he's talking to everybody. And you just wonder, is he talking to the leaders, right? Or is he talking to the, each individual person who is participating? I'm going to keep going just a little bit further here. Quote, and to sustainable capability, not burdensome debt. Partnership is not just a means to an end, but a path which we value for the friendships it creates and the lessons we all learn side by side. Our relationship is one of cooperation, mutual respect, and transparency, and today, no other nation can match the United States' commitment to the continent.
Oh, okay.
Do you see that there? Yeah. When we're talking about the U.S. wanting to assert itself in the entirety of the African continent as Papa Safety, Papa Money, he's like
Papa Roach.
Yeah. Well,
global
just like
police.
Yeah. Global police. Like, we're going to keep you safe. We're going to help you stay safe, and we're going to help you be prosperous, and we're here for you.
We're going to teach you to fish. And hey, if that means you end up in our Navy, tight. That's exactly it.
Georgia Public Broadcasting here in Atlanta has this, they adopted this new slogan a handful of years ago, and I despise it because it has the same vibe as this. It's Georgia Public Broadcasting. We respect and appreciate your intelligence.
Wow. And the way they say it, the sound of the voice is just like, really? Do you really?
That feels like someone's texting you in a relationship after an argument.
Very disingenuous.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the best opener, but that quotation from Big Coops is in line with the earlier statements and signals that the U.S. and the global West have given to the nations of Africa. And the tough part about that is that while those statements have been made and broadcast, they occur in step with some troubling things, not just resource extraction. That's old beans, but tune in for our previous episodes on that. And if you just hear that statement, right? Like you're sitting there and you've never met this guy. For some reason, you know nothing about colonialism, etc., and the CIA and the various companies controlling it. Then you might say, well, who, buddy? This sounds fantastic. Thanks, Big Coops.
I can't wait. I'm. You know what? If you hear that,
sign me up right now.
I was going to say, if you didn't join in this year, then man, you're going to want to get in next year.
We want to teach you how to fish.
Get on the ground floor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we want get on the boat. Get on the boat with us is what they're saying.
And
what
in the tank.
That's what they're always saying. Yeah. So also, to be fair, given that millions and millions of innocent people have been murdered, assaulted, tortured, forced out of their communities by terrorist or separatist organizations, several of which, again, seem to have their own pretty high-end training, then the question, again, becomes a moral quandary. Who would not want to help? How could you look at this situation and not become involved? We're going to pause for a word from our sponsor, and then we're going to explore pretty unpleasant badger in this bag.
We started talking about this incident. Drugs and officials cover up. You couldn't believe it.
From iHeart Podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
There's no way that guy's a doctor.
I'm Paul Pringle, and I'm an investigative reporter for the LA Times. This is the story of an investigation that starts in a hotel room in Pasadena, California, and reaches all the way to the top of two of the most powerful institutions in the city of Los Angeles.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
This is Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption.
We're always going to have predators. It's the good people who stand by and do nothing that allow them to flourish.
Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is an NAACP and Webby Award-winning podcast dedicated to all things mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. Here, we have the conversations that help Black women decipher how their past inform who they are today and use that information to decide who they want to be moving forward. We chat about things like how to establish routines that center self-care, what burnout looks and feels like, and defining what aspects of our lives are making us happy and what parts are holding us back. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia. And I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
We're back. As we've seen in the case of the School of Americas, or the Americas, excuse me, as well as in the cases of various like student activist and freedom fighter groups, there isn't a lot of oversight applied to what happens post-training. I'll teach you all these insurrection techniques, all these interrogation techniques. We'll teach you why the third story is a great place for your enemies to hang out. And then after that, you know, do you, dog?
Yeah. Well, and one of the first things that Exercise Flintlock focuses on is getting the upper command levels together and doing training with those individuals in small groups, right? And I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but it feels like
it's a conspiracy podcast.
Well, I feel like if you're on the pulpit, right, in the way that it feels like Cooper kind of is when he's speaking about what Flintlock's doing. If you're having a small session with the upper echelons of these individual partner countries, it feels like you could almost be preaching to them a philosophy more so even than tactics, at least at that upper level, because you're trying to make everybody see the same picture or vision.
Sure. And also the tough thing about speaking from the pulpit is you don't hear the whispers in the pews. And I think that's the ghost that comes to haunt programs like Flintlock. I mean, the big concern, to your point, Matt, the big concern is kind of ideological. And it's an ideology that on the surface, any decent person can agree with. Human beings should have a say in their government. You should be able to vote for things. Human beings should have a reliable, predictable, day-to-day, year-over-year sense of safety and security, right? And also have the room for luxuries, for aspirations, and so on. These are all very basic things. It's crazy that they become a hot take so often in the history of humans. But the big concern then is that you can train people to the best of your ability, right? Not just in tactics, which tactics can be perishable, right? Just like intelligence. The way to conduct a war back in the day of Napoleon is not the way to conduct a war today. If you march a bunch of people just straight in a series of lines, they're going to die. They're going to get killed. But ideology may not be perishable. And the idea is, going back to the example of firearms having no moral self-evaluation, you're teaching people to be guns. And yeah, you are at the same time asking them to retain enough humanity to only fire at the quote-unquote bad guys. And you're hoping that they will agree with you for the rest of their lives on who is the bad versus the good guy.
What's that expression? If you're a hammer, then everything starts to look like a nail, you know?
Yeah, but some of it is such specialized tactics for like the breach and clear kind of thing, the close quarters tactics, some of it's guerrilla style stuff that you would be carrying out. It feels like the stuff you would need to stage a coup.
What? You know, let's start a coup. It's not just a show on iHeart. It's true. These insurrection tactics, again, they are instituted and taught and to a degree institutionalized because they work. And there's a deeper thing here. If we're getting conspiratorial, another cool thing about this is, well, not cool, interesting, intellectually fascinating. If you are the source of the education, if you are the source of the insurrection tactics and the coup mechanisms, that also means that you can recognize when those are being applied somewhere else. So if somebody studies at your school and then they go out into the streets of the world and they say, hey guys, I learned something interesting about how you might seize a government facility, then you are going to recognize it because you taught that game first, right? So there is, I think, an implicit added benefit to this. I mean, the problem is you can't control the gun. You can't give it a conscience. You cannot dictate people's minds. The Manchurian candidate has never successfully been created. So the same people trained by the US, by Canada, France, Italy, Germany, all the other ones, they can leverage their knowledge to become something very similar to the monsters they were originally trained to fight.
Yeah. What happens when somebody you've trained like that and given an ideological seed, right, that then grows, and you see, let's say, you're in the upper echelons of a country like, oh, I don't know.
Nepal.
Okay, sure. Let's say Nepal. And you watch the people who are governing that country, you can physically see and hear about and know the corruption that's happening at the upper levels. Is that person going to want to stop that corruption because you've gone through this training that specifically is anti-corruption along with being anti-terrorist and anti-terrorism?
Well, yeah, there's an indoctrination component, no question.
Because these things are linked together, right? And I'm not saying corruption at the highest levels. I'm not saying that that's right. I'm saying that that is probably pretty common in every country. Everywhere, always, corruption at the upper levels. But if you've been trained specifically to see that and then you've got ways to fight that thing and like ways to think about fighting that corruption, it feels like you're setting up a bunch of dominoes and then just waiting for one of them to fall eventually that you don't control. But you've set the dominoes up in a way that when that first one does fall, you know, you kind of understand the outcome.
You control the chaos. Yeah. And there's also, I mean, the other side, first off, we're not taking shots at Nepal. They did have a coup in 2005. But, you know, that's just because coups are very in fashion right now. They're like the hottest thing.
Yeah. We could have said Gabon or Niger or Guinea mm-hmm. or Burkina Faso or mm-hmm. Chad or Mali mm-hmm. or Sudan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, keep it coming. Drop the beat. No.
Oh, and that's just me naming a couple of names. According to Al Jazeera, in an article he wrote on August 30th, there have been 45 coups on the African continent out of the 54 nations since 1950. So 45 coups since 1950.
Ooh, yeah. And there were some of the new coups that dropped recently are gonna surprise folks. Let's build on this historical fact, right? Let's build on the historical fact that yes, people have trained what they thought of as sheepdogs to protect a herd from wolves. And in some cases, they would have you believe that the dogs just joined up with the wolves. In any case, it's the sheep that suffer. That is an historical fact. If we branch into the realm of conspiracy, then we ask a more dangerous question. Our interrogation continues, leading us to wonder, what if the same forces training these folks are picking and choosing suitable candidates to lead future coups? To your example, Matt, what if you are in those halls of power, right? You've studied in Paris, you attended Fort Benning. You know, you've got some bona fides. You hang out at a couple of training sessions, and one day, as you're disillusioned about the state of your nation, you get a phone call, right? Or you have an interesting conversation. Maybe best to keep it off written record. And the next thing you know, you're getting a lot of support from a student group you never heard of, right? you've got a suddenly very dedicated, very talented group of civilians, and they share your concerns about the nature of barium supplies, right? Or excuse me, the spirit, the hearts and minds, whatever. Like, what if the United States and its allies are purposely creating sources of future conflict and instability, with the thought being they can control the resulting chaos.
I mean, that's what the picture looks like from here.
We can't prove it.
We can't prove any of that. There's an Intercept article I think we're going to get to where there's an interview.
Shout out Nick. Yeah,
dude, some of the quotations in there and like the takeaway from that. God, I can't wait to discuss with you guys. Okay, go ahead.
When we were talking to Rob, like I kind of naively on purpose, I guess, asked, but to what end does it make sense for us to be in the conflict in Vietnam when everyone knew it was a disaster and it wasn't going well? Like, why is it such a big deal to stay in there? And, you know, he very kindly patted me on the head, young lad, and said, the military industrial complex, you dunce. Like, that was created. It was manufactured. It was a realization that, like, this is big business. And this is, you know, if we can maintain circumstances where we're in control of this flow of money, largely money that doesn't even have to be accounted for, then we're going to enrich everybody that we know and that, you know, we'll have infinite favors forever. I know I'm oversimplifying it, but it's kind of wild.
As long as it works. Yeah.
Well, right? Yeah. And it doesn't hurt that you're going to have a lot of natural resources to extract in these specific strategic places as well.
And at first, this idea might sound trivial, right? Or abstract. We have to remember this does occur in the historical record. There is hard provable precedent for the use of proxies. You know, shout out Afghanistan. The Soviets did what they Mujah deemed correct in that situation. And the U.S. actively did the same thing. They trained, funded, otherwise empowered separatist proxy groups that later became their enemies when the geopolitical winds shifted. And look, we cannot accuse the United States of provably creating monsters with active malicious intention, especially when the simpler explanation may fall down to plain old negligence or factions within these agencies in this alphabet soup. I mean, and yet, you know, Sam Mednick had this point. The military juntas ruling Mali and Burkina Faso are getting military support from Russia. Mali is also working with the Wagner Group. Let's go to David Pugliese from the Ottawa Citizen. He writes, African soldiers trained by U.S. and allied special forces at Flintlock have track records of launching coups to remove civilian elected governments from power in their home nations. In July, he's talking, I believe, in 2022. He's talking in 2023. In July, military officers who had trained at previous Flintlock exercises ousted Niger's democratically elected president in a coup d'etat. There's a pickle. There's a Dude. Pickle there.
Well, and often there's a set of circumstances that someone from the outside, I'm just as an example, me reading about the circumstances around a coup like that, feel like, oh, there's serious corruption there, or there was a real conflict of interest, or there's something, right, that's being talked about. And you go, oh, I could see why maybe there was a coup in that country. But I think maybe from the outside perspective, the way these coups get reported on, it's almost like it's justified sometimes, but I don't know. Often, maybe I'm just personally confused about it because it does seem like there's something else at play behind the scenes that we don't get privy to.
Yeah, very Black Monday murders, right? The vassals of the lattice and so on. Yeah, in recent years, to that point, officers trained by the United States have launched 7 successful coups. And sometimes they even get to coups on coups. Domestic U.S. news doesn't often break a sweat reporting this. There are just too many celebrities to pay attention to.
And, coups on coups, domestic U.S. news. I was hoping there would be an additional end rhyme, but that was good enough for me.
Oh, thanks, Noel. Yeah, we could totally. Well, let's just drop a mixtape on it. Like coups on coups, I think it will work. We owe a great deal of debt to investigative journalists who are all woefully underpaid, And if they're honest, they're not working for institutional forces. This is someone we're very grateful to introduce. Matt, you mentioned him earlier, Nick Terse, writing for The Intercept in 2022. This guy put the work in. He put the time in, the blood, sweat, and the boots on the ground. He was deep into the coup in Burkina Faso. And this coup that he spoke about, he was intensely studying. It was led by a guy named Paul-Henri Sandaogo-Damiba. And this guy studied in Paris, the military college in Paris. He also has a degree in criminology from France. And he spent a few years in the U.S. for training. He went on to serve as the interim president of Burkina Faso from January 31st of 2022 to September 30th of the same year. Things went sideways for him. He lost power. He was overthrown in, can you guess? Would anyone care to guess?
Guantanamo.
Well, it wasn't an election, that's for sure.
Oh, a coup. It was a coup upon a coup. I gotcha.
Yeah.
I
gotcha. Like coups on coups on coups. So the results are obvious. There is a significant correlation between individuals trained by Western forces in things like Exercise Flintlock and then later coups, coup d'etat, you know, all day. And so the question is, we can't prove a conspiracy exists, but why does this pattern seem so strong? So maybe we end it here. Again, we cannot emphasize this enough. The personnel training individuals via Flintlock and via other things like Flintlock, it is not unique. They are not weird supervillains. They're not hanging out, you know, like drinking the blood of the young or whatever and saying, I can't wait to ruin lives. They are genuinely working to do quite the opposite, to save the lives of innocent people. But again, all the stuff they're teaching, it knows no real ethical constraint. You know, the window that you push someone out of, that window never asks you why that person is falling. You know what I mean? It's just a window or it's just a gun. And these things are measured in terms of practical application rather than philosophical coziness and comfort. So is the United States and its Western allies, are they creating the enemies they may fight in the future? If so, are they doing this on purpose? That's a pretty complicated question. And it the problem with that as a conspiracy is that it ascribes a lot of long-term planning aptitude that historically doesn't exist. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
A lot of the conspiracies are just covering up previous mistakes.
To me, it feels more like Inception, philosophical Inception. Yes. And that's really, I think that's really all you have to do in these. Train on the ground exactly how to, the tactics to get it done, and then get the top people who control the people who can do those things, like train them in the philosophy of the way things should be, so that when those individuals observe things like government corruption and all that stuff occurring, they can actually use the tools that they have at their disposal to stop that from happening.
I wonder what kind of, to the point about ideology, right? I wonder what kind of inspirational books are given, right? On the syllabus, on the hearts and minds. Right?
Is it tracts?
Is it like Ayn Rand, Atlas Shrugged? Is it Laws of War or Laws of Power? Is it
Sun Tzu?
Is it Chicken Soup for the Teenage Soul? Or yeah, chicken soup the for the jihadist soul?
The secret, perhaps.
Well, I was watching a video. It was titled Flintlock Exercise. It was posted like in 2016. And there's this guy, LTC William D. Rose.
Yeah, Rose.
Special Operations Command.
Yeah.
Africa. He, guys, I just want to see what you think about this. He says this, quote, an African proverb that they, our partners, like to quote often is, when your neighbor's house is on fire, you help to put it out in order to safeguard your own. Which sounds very good to me, right? That sounds like, yes, this is cooperation across countries for the greater good. If somebody's house is on fire, I don't want it to burn mine. So yeah, selfishly, I'm going to help you put it out. But also, I care about you. Enough, I think. It sounds really good to me. Just wonder what you guys think about that as like a part of the philosophy that's being taught.
I watched that video as well. I saw it via, who is this? DevGrew5022.
That's the accessible one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the one you can find most easily on YouTube. In this conversation, I would say again, these people are acting in good faith. These instructors, these veterans who have survived some crazy thing. This is also an opportunity, a much needed opportunity for special forces to acquire training and experience. There's a reason this exists. It's maybe a multiple birds, one stone situation, right? But but are all the birds they're aiming for the birds the Americans and the global civilian population want to hit?
They're the ones that, as long as they're birds, hit them all day long. I'm sorry, guys. I'm out of the metaphor into literal birds.
Well, that's fine. We know how you feel about birds, Noel.
I know. It's my brand. I got to say it every now and again.
Just along with this other training, they're also providing like civil aid, right? Or something you might call humanitarian aid, working with clean water sources in smaller villages, working with hospitals to get them up to date and like updated, and orphanages even. This is all according to that same person that we were quoting here, Lieutenant William D. Rose. And they're also working with outreach activities, like numerous outreach activities in the small areas where they're having the flintlock exercises. Again, in my mind, it's good. They're helping people, right? But you're also painting a picture of where this help is coming from and, you know, the type of help that you're going to provide. It just all, it builds on that Cold War thing to me in some weird way.
You know, I agree with you. And I propose that we end with a question and something that's bothering me more and more often for many years now. Yes, waging war on terrorists, however defined. Waging war on the quote-unquote bad guys, hostile states, that's all well and good. But what about the private industries that enable the chaos? What about those who profit by the existence of war, regardless of victory or failure toward a specific side? These are often global conglomerates. They make money either way. So what about waging war on those corporations? Proven private industries doing real
anarchy.
Harm. Will the United States or a similar power ever start a school like that?
No. No. That's what they call anarchy. That would be burning down all that we've built. We've worked so hard to get to where we are. Why would you want to do that? What are you, some kind of nihilist?
I just want like an LTC Rose of some sort saying, you know, like far in the future saying, you know, little known fact, we actually trained the Halliburtons once upon a time. And
the Halliburtons.
right. Folks, there's so much more we did not get to. We have endeavored to be even-handed about this, to point out things we cannot prove, to point out patterns that do exist. And most importantly, we want to hear from you. Let us know your thoughts, not just about things like exercise flintlock, but about other similar mechanisms throughout the world. Shout out to dual use technology, et cetera, et cetera. We try to be easy to find online.
Oh boy, do we ever. And I'd like to think we succeed. You can find us at the handle Conspiracy Stuff on X, FKA Twitter, Facebook. We have our Here's Where It Gets Crazy Facebook group where you can join in on the conversation around episodes. If people still go to Facebook, I hope you do. It's a good group, good people there. And we also are that on YouTube. We're Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
We have a phone number and a voicemail system. Call 1-833-STDWYTK. Give yourself a cool nickname, and then you've got 3 minutes. Say whatever you'd like. We're excited to hear from you. When you do call in, please let us know if we can use your voice and message on one of our listener mail episodes. It's totally fine if you don't want to. Just say, hey, please don't use this. If you've got more to send, maybe links, maybe attachments, all that kind of stuff, why not instead send us an email?
We are conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com. We'll be right back.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts,
the medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on Season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.